Welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast with me, Sam Webster Harris. And today we have the most requested episode of the season, which is how to choose a partner. This is, of course, without a doubt, one of the most important decisions of your life. So it is worth getting it right. The wrong person will not only be a drain on your energy and your time, but they will possibly create huge financial and emotional traumas for you. Whereas the right person can push you to achieve things you could never have done alone. And then there is the fact that having a close long-term companion for your life has a proven positive impact on your happiness and your lifespan. So probably worth me dedicating an entire episode to the topic. Let's start with a short story on values. Einstein's first wife, Mileva, was not just a little bit similar to him. In fact, her values and her interests seemed to be basically identical. She was the first female physicist to get into the university where she studied in the same lab as Einstein. She was an outsider used to challenging beliefs to get her ideas adopted. She was incredibly smart, and she even helped him write some of his most famous work. They genuinely did explore the limits of physics and human knowledge together. This marriage didn't work out. In fact, it was a spectacular failure. Einstein later remarried at the age of 40 to his cousin, who was an averagely educated lady of the time. She was not especially interested in physics or science or even the violin. In fact, she had wildly different interests and values, which might seem like a bad recipe compared to his first wife, Mileva. And this is a common mistake that we make when we think about our values. Because actually, Mileva wanted to be a renowned Nobel Award winning scientist just like Einstein. She didn't want to be a mother, and she hated to be in Einstein's shadow. Yet his second wife was happy to support Einstein and valued a shared life together whilst they could each follow their own independent and individual interests. So when choosing a partner and considering values, it's not as simple as we think. And in fact, it doesn't matter if they like necessarily what we like, as long as they are happy with us liking it. And just to be very clear here, I am not saying that women should be homemakers. I'm saying the opposite. I'm saying that if you are a woman and you want to be the president of the United States, you need a husband that wants you to be the president of the United States. And one of the last things you want is a guy who himself wants to be the president. You both have to be on the same team. It's about shared values, not identical personal values. The Cozy Earth Mother's Day sale is here. Their incredible bedding and loungewear is mind-blowingly satisfying to touch, and it is sourced from bamboo, and it's good for the planet, free from toxins, it gets softer with every single wash, and it's naturally temperature regulating. My mum approves, and yours will too. Listeners get 35% off any order at cozyearth.com using code GROWTH.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I do enjoy starting with a story, and I think Einstein's a nice example of the common mistake that we can make when perhaps we imagine our perfect partner that's going to be our compatriot alongside all our dreams and interests, who shares our hobbies and probably wants to watch all the exact same things as we want to watch on TV. I do remember when I was younger, perhaps embarrassingly, having this dreamy idea of maybe a Spanish girlfriend who's into yoga and surfing, and she reads psychology in her spare time whilst maybe running some cool businesses remotely, and obviously she wouldn't be smoking. And yet, actually, that has never happened. And I remember finding myself a few years later, I was dating a French alcoholic at the time, and she hadn't done a day's exercise in her life, and yet I was having lots of fun. And it made me think, that possibly I needed to rethink my idea of an ideal girlfriend, because actually, really what I need is someone that I can enjoy being with and is happy with me being me. And that was about fine. And then all these other like specifics that I seemed to make up for stuff was actually quite irrelevant. So the point here is to say that we don't always fully know what we like without some experience and trying things. We may even have developed a type that we seem to end up with, yet those relationships haven't worked out. So we might need to start dating outside of our type to experience variety and learn the sort of tastes that could be the right sort of partner for us in the long term. If you listen to our episode on attachment styles, you'll remember that we can often be attracted to a partner with a certain attachment type. And we might find that we need to settle for someone who is perhaps less instantly exciting to us, but far more reliable, for example. We also learned in this season how our hormones and emotions at the start of love can cause havoc with our ability to use any reasonable logic and make sensible life choices, which is unfortunate when a partner is your long-term life choice. So my North Star for this episode is, how do we add some sensible logic back in to help us make better choices and decisions that serve us in the long term? And so with that ultimate goal of making the optimal choice, and I certainly don't want to say the word perfect choice because perfect is a bad goal, but optimal in that you don't waste your entire life waiting for perfect because you actually do need a partner for your life rather than wasting the whole thing waiting. But with that optimal goal, we're going to cover what I think are the main areas that we should be working on and improving our own mindsets with to help us achieve a better result. And that first area is, of course, how do we improve the quality of the mates that we are choosing from? And the first thing here is to be more open-minded to discovery. By widening the available search field, you can simply increase the possibilities by being less opinionated. Now, of course, people like what they like, and you're probably not going to be attracted to something that you aren't attracted to. But when it comes to the rest of someone's lifestyle, you can be a lot less judgmental and open-minded to finding out the types of people that might be worth spending more time with. I think we have this crazy Disney-esque version of love, which we were given as kids, that can push us to expect too much perfection. That means that we do reject more of the possibilities that might be coming our way, because we have this anticipation that we'll just feel this huge, overwhelming joy of love as soon as we meet the right person. But there's actually going to be a lot more possibilities by trying things and seeing what happens. Now, on that topic, the second thing we can do to increase the quality of people is to go on more dates. Now, this might sound like an annoying thing to do and difficult, but it's really worth doing. Imagine, let's say, you had a product that you could sell for $1 million. You would be willing to take 100 in-person meetings that were a hassle to sometimes get to eventually sell that one product, and you wouldn't mind it taking you a whole year if by the end of it, you had one person willing to buy it. It would be worth the rejections, and it would be worth those exciting, misleading conversations that lead nowhere. And yet, when you want to find the ideal partner for your life, people are like, oh, I just want to date a few people this month and find the one. And it's such a short-term mindset for something that will impact the entire rest of your life. So if you think about it logically, then going on 100 dates is a very reasonable number to go on. Yes, 100 dates will feel like a long time to get through, especially if it isn't that easy to get one. But maybe you also need to start approaching more people and accepting people that you perhaps wouldn't have gone on instantly to see if maybe they are better than you expected. When we start to be less selective and judgmental up front, we can learn more about the things that we really value. We can get better at dating ourselves, so we're more likely to attract the right person when we finally do meet them. And so those, I think, are two levers that really will radically help increase your chances of finding a better partner. And it leads us nicely into the third lever, which is just being better. And it is possibly the most important one. Yes, it does sound harsh, but honestly, the biggest factor that affects how good a partner you can find is how good you are. And you'll see many people who are like, when I find the right person, they will really see me and like, they'll just love me so purely for who I am, even though I can be, you know, lazy and yeah, I'm not fit and I don't always follow through on commitments and like, I have been unfaithful, but like, it wasn't completely my fault. And yeah, I don't always pull my weight, but they'll see me deeply and like, so deep, and they'll just love me. And people want some like perfect person for them without doing any heavy lifting from their side to be a better or even perfect person themselves. Even if you don't think you relate to that, the point is there's still actionable advice for anybody that wants to go on dates. If they want to add a few points to their attraction levels, they can still become a better person. Whether that's aesthetic, like income, style, or physical health, or whether that's personality, like being an uplifting person to be around that people just want to spend time with. These are both huge areas that will make better people want to date you. And it'll be so much easier to make a better choice when you have better options. Now, I could be here for hours discussing how you could then improve yourself in all these manners, but that's what the entire podcast I run is for, so just go and listen to the rest of that. The important point here is the concept that your own value is going to massively impact what you can give to others and how much easier it will be to find a reliable and loving partner by improving yourself. And now that I've uncovered those important hard truths that you just have to accept, we'll go through some mistakes and bad advice that you often hear so that you'll have a better chance of securing the right person before we then address the signs for what to avoid and how to know that we are on the right path with someone. So, mistakes. Number one, don't go shopping when you're hungry. You know the crap that you come back with from the supermarket when you're starving and you can't think properly at all? Well, it is the same in relationships. In the episode I did about the paradox of loneliness, we spoke about the value of becoming independent and knowing ourselves before we are able to be successfully interdependent. And the reason that I beat that topic to death is that you have to make peace with yourself and be content with who you are and where you are. Otherwise, if you go dating and you take someone out of desperation, that won't solve anything for you in the long term anyway, because that person will start to cause you more problems than they're solving. Big mistake number two, trying to change your partner. You've probably heard this a million times, and you will probably need to hear it a million more times. But you can't change people, and you need to be happy with them being the same person that they currently are for the rest of their life. The difficulty here is in wrapping our heads around the weird conundrum that actually we are all continuously changing, and one of the hallmarks of a healthy relationship is helping each other change and grow for the better. But regardless, you must expect that their personality and their interests will not change to be something you prefer, and they might even change to be something you prefer less. And you simply need to be able to accept them as they are and to be supportive of the areas they may or may not want to improve without any expectation and especially no requirements. Mistake number three, waiting too late for hard conversations. Now, you will probably have some important things for you in your life. Maybe you want to travel the world. Maybe you want to have kids. Maybe you want to be the president of America. Who knows? Awkwardly, you do need to have someone who wants the same thing for you on a similar timeline. If you want to have kids in 5 years, but they think they might want kids, but they aren't too sure and not in the next 10 years, do you now move on? Well, the answer to these tough questions comes from having the tough conversations with yourself first. You need to know what your own non-negotiables are and why, so that you don't launch into relationships and then turn into a floppy mess of priorities that just aren't prioritized. And once you work those things out, you know who has some long-term potential and who doesn't instantly, and you don't need to waste your time or the time of others. Mistake number four, and that is confusing chemistry with compatibility. As I've said, our hormones can fire like crazy when we first start dating someone who is a bit exciting, and we can blast past all the warning signs, which inevitably come out much later. And I'll talk about those a lot later in the episode. But firstly, whilst we're on the topic of how to make good, sensible life decisions for your life, one of the best decisions I have made is to start taking Magic Mind. They're delicious and incredibly easy to take shot of matcha tea, L-theanine, bacopa, ashwagandha, and 10 other brain superfoods has not only made me remarkably perkier, it has helped me reduce my caffeine intake to the point that I barely drink coffee when I have Magic Mind around, and I feel more focused all day long and I sleep better. Their highest quality ingredients are backed by science and it is genuinely worth a try. You can get 56% off at magicmind.com/growthms and use my code GrowthMS20 at checkout. They offer you 100% money-back guarantee if you don't feel the benefits, so there's nothing to lose. That is magicmind.com/growthms to invest in your brain and get 56% off using the code GROWTHMS20 at checkout. Details are in the description. Okay, before we move into how to screen out those people that seem great but in the long term won't be, I have a few myths to bust from terrible dating advice that's out there. The first one is that you only meet weirdos online. That is actually not 100% true. Sure, there are some weirdos online, but there are lots of really great people on dating apps. My best friend even met his wife, who is lovely, on dating apps. And if you want to make your life easier for yourself, like, it's totally worth a try. It's a way that you can get exposed to more potential partners and experience different types of people. And yet, there might be some dud dates. But honestly, if you are trying to find an incredible person worth spending the rest of your life with, I don't think it's that much of a sacrifice. Myth 2. When you meet the right person, you'll know straight away. I already alluded to this, and love at first sight is just mostly attraction and lust, because you really don't even know the person at this point. I think movies like The Notebook just idolize this weird fantasy of some really hot person being willing to jump off a Ferris wheel if you don't go on a date with them. And like, it's so absurd if that person doesn't even know you. Like, threatening to kill yourself if someone you don't know doesn't go on a date with you is so weird, creepy, manipulative, and immature when you actually think about it. Yet that's one of the best-selling love movies because, yeah, we're all fine with it because Ryan Gosling is like, oh, sorry if I've ruined your favorite movie for you, but it is stupid. Anyway, just to calm myself down here, I would remind you that plenty of relationships actually start in the workplace due to prolonged exposure over time between some people who didn't even think twice about each other the first time they met. And I definitely notice in my own life that I found quite a few people I've dated thought of me as like a real grower who they didn't even think they'd fancy me when they first met me. One of those reasons is probably my incredible humor that only comes out once you know me, and I keep astoundingly well hidden the rest of the time. But likewise, I would say for myself, I've actually judged some people and expected them to be maybe materialistic or annoying, and then found them to be surprisingly kind and down to earth once I've got to know them. So love at first sight is really dumb and won't help you find love in the slightest. And I think one of my favorite rules that might change your life is to always have a second date. It just reduces the pressure on that first date, and it allows you to get just a much better idea of each other. You can be less interview checklisty and more playful and relaxed. And some people can also be crap at first dates, and they might actually be the diamond in the rough that you're looking for. Because when you think about it, someone who is really good at impressing other people straight away, they probably have lots of choices. They're probably going to be harder to keep down. And there's maybe probably some things in what they're saying that isn't genuine. Anyway, that was a long point. Myth 3. You should play hard to get. Again, stupid. Deliberately not texting back quickly or trying to show that you aren't interested. It's just a childish game that no one needs to play. Now, sure, don't creep someone out with incessant stalker behavior, but if you like them, let them know. Certainly don't ignore their calls or wait days to text back. It just comes across like you're avoidant and uninterested, and in today's connected world, it's not worth anyone's effort chasing someone who isn't bothered about them. I think there's this really bad advice that men like women that are hard to get, and also vice versa. It's a misinterpretation of the fact that we like people who are selective. It's attractive to be choosy, but then it feels really special and warm when we are chosen. But playing hard to get sends the message that I don't like you and I'm better than you, rather than I'm really choosy, but I do choose you. That's the message you do want to send. And then if for some reason you have sent the I don't like you, I'm better than you vibes, it's really worth thinking if you want to date someone that continues to pursue you after you sent those signals, because it might be that the people that move on after you've started behaving avoidantly, they are going to be the secure individuals that you want to date, and it's the ones that bother to chase you who are the very people you want to avoid. Myth number 4, put your best foot forward. Now, this means giving a false idea of yourself. Like trying to monitor your behavior to create a good impression to achieve the prize of a relationship, it doesn't work because they aren't dating you, they are dating an impression of you. And you need someone that wants you to be well. Now, of course, first impressions matter. And I certainly fart around my girlfriend way more now than I did on our first dates, slightly. And it took at least 6 months before I knew she could even fart. But farting aside, you still want to try and create emotional intimacy early in the relationship. And that means sharing flaws and things that you're embarrassed about, and then finding out that they could still love you despite these facts. Because no one is perfect. But if your partner can accept you as an imperfect human, that means love is possible between you. If they are only presented an idealized version of you that doesn't have any worries about money or family, if you pretend to be knowledgeable and interested in a topic that you don't care about, there's a problem. Like, I personally hate football. If I dated a girl who was into football, I could read up on the latest scores, I could talk about the psychology of the greatest football managers, but that might give the impression that I want to watch football every weekend, and she's going to be disappointed when I really don't actually want to do that. It would be stupid. So instead of trying to impress someone with false qualities, the best thing to do on your first date, as Alain de Botton says, which is to ask each other in what way you are crazy. And I really love that as a piece of advice. So now we've covered what we can do to increase the quality of potential partners and outlined the main mistakes that we make that can block things from advancing when they should be advancing. Finally, we need to look at when we should be stopping ourselves from dating the wrong people, even when they seem very attractive and exciting and we have chemistry that is really intoxicating. There's people that seem so great and fire us up, but are actually going to be a dud and it's going to be a disaster of a relationship. If we're lucky, they'll abandon us quickly and we'll have escaped years of a bad relationship. But if we are unlucky, we will waste years of our life with someone sucking the energy out of us. So let's cover how to screen for solid, good quality partners. Now, the first thing we should look at is family history and trying to understand how good someone is at forgiving and accepting others versus how much they blame or make trouble for others. And there are two red flags here in a partner's family history. When everything is absolutely awful or completely perfect, you're really looking for a good balance by where they acknowledge some mistakes and difficulties a family member may have had or caused them, whilst also recognizing some positive qualities as well. Perhaps their father struggled with depression or wasn't good with money, but could also be loving and generous when they had the ability to. Now, of course, there can be some wonderful people out there who did have a terrible family around them their whole life or experienced some serious trauma, which isn't their fault. But red flags aren't about running away the first time you see one. It's an indicator to put you on alert and might well be a sign of further red flags you need to watch out for. It doesn't, of course, matter to you whether or not someone likes their family, but if they hold grudges and if they blame those around them without taking any responsibility themselves for their own actions or empathizing with the situations of others, well, that does matter to you, which leads us on to the next thing to look at, which is just their past relationships in general, with partners and with friends. You want to find out what kind of friendships they currently have and how many long-term friendships they've actually been able to maintain. Like, do they still have friends from school? Most people who are kind and caring are able to maintain at least a few long-term friends over many years. And you want to be worried if you're talking to someone who indicates how they always get let down by others. This would show a serious lack of trust in people that you shouldn't be trying to fix and should probably be avoiding. Furthermore, can this person take some responsibility in their own failed romantic relationships, or at least acknowledge why that partner wasn't right for them, perhaps due to incompatibility terms or their own lack of judgment? Like, what you really don't want to hear is someone saying purely derogatory terms like, she was crazy or he was a total narcissist, just complete full-on blame with no acknowledgement of the fact that maybe they weren't the perfect partner either. We can all look very unappealing to the other person in the relationship by the end of it, and so it's just not probably the whole truth. The reason a relationship ended was entirely due to one person. It's again a warning sign that you need to be watching. Now, the third thing to look for is how they handle anger. You can't simply ask someone if they're a calm and nice person because of they'll say yes. But you should watch their behavior when things don't go their own way. Let's say something goes wrong in a restaurant or their phone app isn't working. In life, and especially in relationships, we're going to handle disappointment, and things won't go our way all the time. If they become stressed or blameful and not very nice to a waiter, for example, that's not a good sign. The way people act with others when they're stressed will say a lot about how they will act with you one day. And in life in general, I think how people treat waiters is a fairly reliable mark of what they're like. And it can also be a good indicator of the next sign to watch out for, which is generosity. According to a long-term study at the University of Virginia, generosity is the number one key to a good relationship. And I don't mean generous by like just tipping waiters or buying you a drink or your dinner. I mean, do they help, support, and teach others at work? Or do they like take all the glory for themselves? Do they let other people out in traffic? Essentially here, like, are they interested in helping improve the lives of others in a realistic day-to-day level? Because someone might say that they really want to change the world and they're interested in improving their lives, but they'll be a dick most of the time, but they'll validate it because their plan is to eventually become a billionaire where they'll one day build hospitals and libraries and cure diseases. But you want someone that's going to be a generous person today in your relationship now. And now that I've just said that, you also need to be careful of someone who seems to be generous towards you, because whilst they are excited currently by their hormonal attractions at the start of a relationship and the chase, what you need to look for is how generous they'll really be after a multiple year relationship with lots of difficulties involved. Now, the fifth thing to start looking for is just how full their life is. As in, do they have meaning in their life outside of dating you? I would look for something like interests and passions and, really importantly, a history of expanding themselves. Are they good at taking opportunities and embracing curiosity and novelty whilst not being stuck in the same routines or job? And this is important because keeping a relationship interesting takes hard work, and it really doesn't come naturally to many people. If they just lock themselves inside every evening to watch TV or play computer games, they might find it difficult to maintain a spark and be interesting. So when looking at this, you should probably also look at things like, do they have dreams and do they have a history of making some of those dreams come true? Because someone who just has vague fantasies but never takes a single step towards making these things happen, they're probably going to be kind of depressing to be with if you have to live with them for the rest of your life. If they just have a bunch of excuses for never getting anywhere, like not really what you want with your life, probably. Anyway, now that we've covered those biggest flags, as I said, one individual flag on just a single point, that can be fine. But these are general indicators behind a wider problem. What we're really trying to do here is essentially screen for someone that has a positive attitude and a growth mindset. Someone who can accept challenges within their life with grace. What you really don't want is someone who is a source of more stress in your life. Because when we first start dating someone, everything might seem dreamy and we can plan our lives where we'll both be so happy and on our best behavior, but it's not that simple. When you start doing things like moving house, holidays, having kids, jobs going wrong, maybe being ill, these things can all be huge sources of stress. And if I can guarantee you anything in life, that many of your plans will blow up in your face. And if you have a partner, many of their plans will blow up in their face. So let's say you're moving house, but you get food poisoning whilst their favorite sofa gets ripped and the delivery driver gets lost and their job's under loads of pressure. Like, when it rains, it pours, right? You know what I'm saying. These things happen in life. Now, when all those things happen, is this partner going to be a strong source of support and positivity to help you through it all? Or will they be amplifying your problems and making everything twice as difficult? And that is a really important question to ask when you're thinking about the rest of your life. So that's why we screen for positive personality traits now, because they will all come out. And now my geeky side is excited to mention something called the optimal search theory. This is about how we make decisions to continue searching versus settling for what we have. The optimal search theory is a statistical way to get the best result in an unknown search situation. It works perfectly for dating as much as it does for finding the best strawberry in a field. Essentially, you need to decide how long you have to search for. So let's say you want a partner and you have a maximum endpoint of like in 10 years time, because that's when you want kids. You should allocate then the first 30% of your remaining time to searching, dating around and having like small dates, relationships, perhaps 6 months, even a year. And you're trying things and learning about life and learning about what you like. Then after that 35% mark, you'll move into settling mode. That means you continue searching, and every partner that you find that isn't as good as someone you've had before, you move on immediately. You don't date them for more than a few weeks. And then as soon as you find a partner who is better than everyone you have dated so far, you settle with them and you put everything into that relationship. Now, of course, this rule is from statistics, and you might well find the perfect partner on day one, and you should probably try and stick with them. So don't blindly follow the recommendation of like searching for 3 years if you have 10 years before having kids, etc. But the point of this mental model is that the average person will probably get the most benefit from choosing a partner using a framework similar to this. And I think it's funny that this was just identified using purely maths without thinking about emotions or maturity. But actually, on emotional levels and maturity levels, it does work really well, because most of us do just need some time to get to know ourselves and be in a few different relationships first to understand what good even looks like before we are then ready to move into settling mode and start a full serious relationship and marriage. So I do think it's worth anyone that's trying to find a partner to hear about the optimal search theory, because I think it is a really useful mental model to be aware of. And now there is a healthy abundance of many topics I could dig into further, such as narcissism and signs of abusiveness that you want to be avoiding, how to tell different attachment styles that might work for you, or what you should do if someone's been divorced and if that's someone you can have a safe marriage with or not. And then, of course, there is the fact that we are all changing over time, so you're dealing with the constant choice of deciding whether to stay with a current partner or not. Well, sadly, there isn't room for any of that in this episode or even in this season. But interesting questions to have to hand going forwards for the future that I'm sure I will look into at some point. And I am delighted to now be finishing this season on relationships. But if you do personally have any questions that you feel have been unanswered, let me know and I'll do an Ask Me Anything at some point for sure. If you enjoyed this episode, please do share it with someone who you know makes terrible life choices, because they'll really need to hear this. I've had lots of fun doing this season, and thank you for all the suggestions as we've gone through it. And I'm certainly very excited to start digging back into fresh topics. And if you could hit me up on the podcast with a positive rating, it'll totally help boost my credibility so that my girlfriend is less likely to leave me for like a better podcaster. And I will be eternally grateful for that. And now remember that life is super short and to be enjoyed. So don't hang about waiting for things to get going. Life is to be enjoyed here and now. So as they say, get busy living or get busy dying.